1450 AM and 103.5 FM KBBS. This is Community Speaks, and it's being shop on Fort Street in Buffalo. Joining me this morning is Bud Stewart, Sheridan Region Public Information Specialist, and Jim Seaman, Buffalo Game Warden, as we've got a number of things to talk about this morning. First, guys, thank you for taking the time here today.
Thanks. You're welcome, and good morning to you, Brady.
Absolutely, and we'll start off with some important dates to remember, as some of them are coming up pretty quickly here, Bud.
Right. The 2018 hunting season, preparation for that is here. The hunting the application packets became available on our website on Monday, the 18th of January, and starting on January 2nd. Will be the first day that people can start applying for 2018 licenses. Now, the one group that's the most important to are non-resident elk hunters, because they have to have their applications in the month of January. So, and people are saying, well, why should we be concerned about that? Probably mostly residents. But if you have a brother-in-law or uncle or, you know, dad or relation that's a non-resident, want to come hunting elk, you need to get a hold of them and tell them they have to put in January so they can have a chance to come hunt elk with you. So,
and how do they go about doing that?
They go on the Game Fish website. It's all online now. You can just go on the Wyoming Game Fish website, and there's a button that's apply or buy, and just go through the rules and one of those things. And along those lines, just pitch that when you do that, we would really encourage people to provide your email address. We don't give those email addresses out. We don't sell them or anything unless you give us permission to do that, which you can. But typically, we do not sell those, give them away, or anything. But the reason that's important is because if you have a hunting license in Wyoming, you either definitely will, or you have a chance of getting a hunter harvest survey sometime after your hunting season. And it's so much easier to just email that person. You do it online, you can do it quickly, and it just expedites the whole process. Very, very easy to do if you provide us with your email address.
Okay. And
a couple other things, Brady, on license applications. What we've been seeing in the past for many, many years is people putting a P.O. box down as their physical address. There's two lines on all the applications, whether you do it online or a hard copy. There's the physical address and your mailing address. And certainly we need the mailing address to mail out licenses. But we also need a physical address where you live, and try to increase people actually put down their physical address of where they live. The very first applications that the department receives that are required are landowner, non-resident landowner applications. And they are due the first 20 days in January before the regular non-residents. So just notice, if you have a landowner that qualifies and they're a non-resident, there are quite a few around here, they have the first 20 days in January to get that application to the local game warden. Another thing on dates is landowner coupons. If you're a landowner and you get landowner coupons, we're starting to take those and accept those now. And we'll take those all the way through March 1st. And I've got a bunch. They go right to your local game warden. So been getting those and encourage people to send those in too.
Okay. And has it been an issue of people dumping carcasses along public and in private lands there and along county roads?
It has. It's one thing that we wanted to talk about today. This is towards the end of the season. We still have some cow elk seasons going on, and there are a lot of people that process their own animals, bring them home to their garages and their shops and cut them up, which is great. But what we've seen historically, it's getting better, are what do people do with the carcass, the bones, the head, and the rib cage. It used to be, and it still happens a little bit, people take them out of town and dump them on public land or private land or along the roads. That's against the law. And I guess it may have been a little bit more acceptable 20, 30 years ago, but it's not. And one of the main reasons that the department doesn't want people to do that is the spread of diseases, you know, chronic wasting disease. And we just heard a story this morning from Montana. It's slowly coming this way. We've seen cases increase a little bit every year. One of the things that the researchers believe is that this disease is spread through the spinal fluid on, you know, spinal columns and heads. And so the day of, and really it's never been legal, but the day of processing your animal home and taking that rib cage and head and dumping it, are long gone. And it's a violation. Not only, it's a type of littering violation for one, and it's a violation of our chronic wasting disease regulations on spreading these bones out, you know, in places that we don't want them. If you process your animal in the field, and a lot of people do, they'll be back in the backcountry a couple miles, and they'll debone an animal out just for a lot less weight to pack out. You certainly can do that, and you can leave those bones in that on the spot there. But once you move that whole animal away from that spot where the animal died, take it home, the only legal place to discard those rib cages and heads and bones is in a landfill, an approved landfill. But we're seeing a little bit of that every year. You know, we have problems right here close to Buffalo, Moser Gulch area. People dump carcasses there. People this time of year, you know, under a lot of the underpasses on the interstate, you'll see bags and carcasses and rib cages of animals. It's illegal to do that. So just want to encourage people, not only it's unsightly, but the spread of diseases to try bring them to the landfill. One thing that I had a bunch of carcasses that I picked up not too long ago, plus some whole animals that were animals that had to be put down, crippled animals. And I think I had seven animals in the back and remains in the back of my truck. And I went to the dump and it cost me $15, $16. So it's not too expensive. I think the dump here has a minimum charge of $4, and I think most of the rib cages and stuff like that would fall under that weight limit. It would be $4. So it's not that.
Now, say if you have some land, maybe you live on a nice piece of property, can you dig a hole and just bury it?
I believe that's fine. You know, if it's in the same area where the animal was harvested, we still don't want people to shoot something up on the mountain and bring it to a whole another area in case that animal was a disease. Now, if you bury it, I would think, on your own property and it's covered completely, I think that's acceptable.
Okay. Now, you mentioned CWD, chronic wasting disease. For the animals that have this, say if somebody shoots a mule deer, has CWD, they don't know it, they eat the meat. How does it affect humans?
Well, Brady, that's a question that a lot of people would like to have answered. The recommendations for the Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization are for humans to not consume CWD-positive animals, whether it's a white-tailed deer, mule deer, moose, elk, whatever. Pronghorn antelope don't get CWD, so you don't have to worry about that. But those two organizations, their recommendations are not to consume it. And so our department has that we follow those two organizations' recommendations in that if you know that your animal has tested positive, you are not required to consume it or to use it. And Jim can speak to, okay, then what can you do with the meat?
And how do you know? How would you know it tested positive?
Well, we can test. The Wyoming Game and Fish Department will, if a hunter requests that their animal be tested, and we have several people that do that each fall, they'll call us up and say, you know, hey, I shot an elk, I'd like to have it tested. We take two of the, they're called the retropharyngeal lymph nodes. So two of the lymph nodes out of the like the tonsil area or whatever, right at the base of the skull. Those can be sent in, and this time of year we're sending down samples once or twice a week. It doesn't take very long for our lab in Laramie to turn those around, typically a day or two. So if you harvest an animal, you kind of have to leave it, if you're going to process it yourself, you kind of have to leave it hang for a couple, 3 days in a cool spot. And then when you find out that it's positive, then you've got to make the decision. Do you want to consume it, or do you want to take it? And like I said, Jim can speak as to what's the legalities after that point.
And just before you jump into that, do we know if anyone who that has consumed it has gotten ill or anything like that?
Not to our knowledge.
I know at least a couple people that have consumed deer that were positive. They found out later after they consumed a quarter or half the deer, and chronic wasting disease has probably been around for 40 to 50 years. So certainly people have consumed it.
Sure.
And yeah. So we leave it up to the people. But you will get a letter if you send it off to the department to be tested. You'll get a letter and an email, which brings up a good point. Sometimes an email will come, sometimes a letter saying if your animal is positive, it was positive. If you can show that, the department recognizes that and that you could bring that animal to the landfill. And I've had the landfill call me and say, hey, somebody brought in a whole deer or a whole elk. So they will call, but if you can prove that, that's fine.
Okay.
It's acceptable. So.
Yeah, like Jim said, I think we probably have here in Wyoming, at least in the eastern half of the state, people that hunt and consume wild game. There's probably been a lot of people that have consumed CWD-positive meat from those animals and have never known it. And so, but we're precautious, just like, those precautions are taken that those two, worldwide organizations have recommended, and we follow that. So,
and so when you do, if you do find out that that the animal you have does have CWD, you can then take it to a landfill. Is that the way of disposing of that?
Yep,
then
that's the, we prefer an approved landfill, which a landfill here in Buffalo is. So yeah, if they do that, that'd be great.
All right. And, some people, and I personally was wondering about this, as I know a kid who was under the age of 14, 12, I believe, and was wondering if he could go pheasant hunting with me. And I didn't know exactly the laws of that and the requirements, I guess, if he needed some type of license. And I would assume whatever pheasants he shoot would count towards my daily limit of three.
Well, actually, Brady, I'm glad you brought that up. No, he can have his own possession limit.
Okay.
And we get asked this, I get asked this all throughout the year, not only dealing with hunting, but also fishing. And for residents, so small game animals and game birds, a resident doesn't need a license until they're 14. They can hunt pheasants and squirrels and rabbits without a license. If they use a firearm, they need to obviously have taken hunter safety. But they have their own limits in addition to the requirement of an adult on game birds. An adult has to be there. And the reason for that is species identification. For instance, around here for pheasants, you have to shoot a rooster pheasant. Well, in case you flush a hen, it's good to have an adult there to stop the 12-year-old and say, don't shoot that one.
Sure. Now, is it does that adult have to have their license then?
No.
Okay.
No, and so that's what's confusing is an adult can be there present just to help with identification, and they do not need a license.
Okay.
And that's the same with rabbits and squirrels. And the same with fishing. I get this question throughout the summer is, do I have to share my limit with my 11-year-old son or daughter? And that's no. You can each have your own limit. Now, we're talking about residents here. It's different for non-residents. And, people... non-residents do have to share a limit, and there has to be a licensed adult.
Okay.
So, for instance, a single mom who doesn't fish at all can bring her son or daughter out, and they can fish and catch their own limit, and they don't need a license. And it's the same with pheasants. Now, there's a couple exceptions with pheasants, not with license and permits. If a youth is hunting on one of those areas that we release birds, and there's two areas in Johnson County where the department releases birds, then they do need a pheasant special management stamp.
They need one themselves?
They need one themselves.
Okay.
Now, an adult, if they're hunting, they need one. But if an adult's just walking along, they don't need one.
Okay. But if I have one of them and I'm hunting with this 12-year-old kid, he would also have to have one of them. Okay.
Yep. So that's the exception where they don't need a license, but they do need that permit.
Okay.
And that permit is that is for the program itself, raising and releasing birds, and it's quite expensive, and so that pheasant management stamp goes for that whole project.
Now, you mentioned there's two spots in Johnson County. Bud Love, what would be the other one?
Rock Creek.
Okay.
The Rock Creek
School HFR.
And the HFR. There's three
spots. There's actually three.
Okay.
And now, we're talking about pheasants, and we still have 9 days left in the pheasant season.
Sure.
If it warms up a little bit, I might get out there again.
Yeah. I think we'll do one more release if we haven't done it. But they've been actively releasing at least once a week on
maybe
those
off
three.
The air you guys can tell me the time and place you're going to do this release. No.
There are a lot of people that like that. Would like to know that. But so there's still, we still have over a week of pheasant hunting and encourage people to get out. And now with the kids in spring break, their Christmas break, I mean, coming up right now, would be this last 6-7 days would be a good time for kids to go on. And I guess you can go hunt them without, you don't need a dog to hunt pheasants, right, Brady?
You know what? The first couple of times I went out, I did not have a dog. And the first time, we actually got a couple to flush out. And then now we use a dog. He actually has had no training, but he must be a genius dog because we just had him smell the tail feathers of one we'd already killed, and he went and flushed him out. And it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and you'll find most avid bird hunters, you know, really hunt for their dog. They love watching them, the dog work. And
yeah, and the dog loves it. I mean, they're so proud, you know, once they get one. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I found out this is the first year I've eaten pheasant. Pheasant is delicious.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. Maybe not so much the legs, but the breast is very good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real good table fare, without a doubt.
So as we are rolling up on the end of those seasons, as we mentioned, license fees are actually going to be going up here for 2018.
Yes, and here's something that we wanted to inform people. The license fees are going to be going up on January 1st, but licensed buyers get kind of a break here in that during December, right now, in 2017, you can go buy, if a license is available, like a fishing license or a trapping license, mountain lion license, whatever. If that license is available, you can go purchase that license right now for 2018, but pay the 2017 price.
Oh, I know where I'm going when this shows
up. So get down and now most of the licenses are for residents are not going up very much. $2, $3, $4. Most of them less than 10, except there's one exception, and that is registering your boat. Those licenses have gone up considerably. They've kind of for the most part, doubled, so from, you know, like 15 to 30 or something.
So go
like
register
that.
It here in the next few days before.
If you haven't registered your boat or the registration ends in 2017, you know the smart thing to do would be to go do it for 3 years right now, and that way you could get it for 18. If your boat is registered through 18, you wouldn't be able to do this. But if it ends in 17. Then you can go do 18, 19, and 20 under the 2017 prices, and you're going to save a little money. So just wanted to let people know that, you know, it's been 11 years since we've increased hunting fishing licenses. So it's you know, kind of time and with inflation and all that. But like I said, non-resident fees are going up more than resident fees, but resident hunting licenses are not all that much. For instance, just here on the sheet, resident antelope license is going from $33 to $37. It's going up $4.
That's not going to break anybody.
No, that shouldn't break. Resident elk is going from $52 to $57. It's going up $5. So, you know, it's just they're going up a little bit, but resident licenses are going to non-resident licenses are going to increase a little bit more. But there's that one exception for residents. So if you can, if you're eligible to get your boat registered and stuff, why go do that?
And of course, as the temperatures are dropping, pretty soon we're going to be seeing ice form over the lakes, and it's going to be time to get ice fishing gear ready.
Yes, get it ready, because we're going to be going here in just a few days. I think I checked the three local waters here yesterday, and Healy is totally ice covered.
Enough safe.
I don't know how safe it would be. Better give it a couple more days before.
It's supposed to be very cold this weekend, so that ought to help.
If we get some of those temperatures that some of the weather apps are predicting, where we get, you know, below zero, it won't take a day or two of that, and we'll definitely have safe ice on Healy.
Well, on Saturday it's supposed to be a high of 10, 12, somewhere in there, so it's not going to be
very
warm.
We should build an inch or two of ice over the next few days, and then it will be safe. Buffalo Wetlands Pond's totally capped and has been for a while. I didn't notice any ice fishing activity on either one of those. Healy or the Wetlands Pond. Have you seen anybody, Jim, out ice fishing?
No, I haven't, but I would bet this weekend there will probably be people out.
There'll be so many.
Definitely then, after this weekend, because it's going to be so cold. Myself, I'm still a little skittish because we had a pretty mild December.
Exactly. But now when it comes to DeSmet, you know, about the only ice on DeSmet is there's a very little skim of ice on Boat Dock Bay. There were some geese that were, you know, right at the mouth, and the rest of it is kind of skimmed over. But there's hardly any ice on Barky Draw. Way up where the kind of the old trees you start from there on up, there might be a little skim. But in Monument Bay, there was no ice. So
so you can go fishing, just not ice fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You could still you can get a boat in Monument and Barky
you can still. Well, there's probably not the docks.
The docks are out.
The docks are out, but the ramp is still there.
And there were people out on with boats in December.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So, but you know, if it gets below zero, those bays may form some ice, and then it wouldn't be possible to launch a boat. So
now, when you say Buffalo Wetlands, is that spot that would be just on the other side of the interstate?
Yes,
over there. Yeah, now, I notice I walk my dog around there quite a bit, and it looks like there's a couple of duck blinds set up. Are people allowed to hunt out there?
No, you're not allowed to hunt. Those are waterfowl observation blinds.
Okay. Viewing blinds.
Okay.
Yeah, gotcha. Viewing blinds. Okay. That's what those were set up for. And you know, bird watchers do use them. I've used them.
I thought it would be an odd place to allow people to hunt. You're pretty close to a lot of stuff.
You know, there's the history behind that is that used to be Buffalo Sewer Lagoon years and years and years ago. And, oh, man, it's been probably almost 30 years ago, there was some money that was procured, and we turned that into a kind of an outdoor classroom environmental area and a wetlands for waterfowl. So fishing is allowed, hunting is not. And there's some pretty decent fish. We stock some, Wyoming Game and Fish Department stocks some catchable trout in there, but there's also perch and largemouth bass. So there are people that will ice fish that, and they fish it during the summer and catch some pretty decent fish. So, but yeah, that's that one that, you know, you can take the road that goes around out by the shooting range and access that. So there by the Heritage Park. But so of the three waters, two are going to be ready here pretty quick. DeSmet, probably not for couple weeks maybe or whatever,
which is okay because that isn't that where they have the polar plunge on New Year's Day. Gotta have somewhere to jump in.
So you know, and there's been years where they've had to cut a little hole in the ice to go, but this year they may be able to just run down the boat ramp and jump in.
Are we gonna see you guys in the polar plunge?
Yeah, Brady, I don't think you're gonna see me out there.
You're not gonna see me either.
I came out and took pictures of other people doing it one.
Yeah, I do that
winter
as well. I go out and watch, but that's about as close as I get. And of course, people when they are ice fishing need to take care of the safety. You know, the safety issue of you don't want to fall through the ice, things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. That's the last thing that you want to do when you're ice fishing. So you know, when you're ice fishing, you always have to emphasize safety. And you know, there's three or four basic rules when you go. Go with somebody or make sure somebody else is there. If you're out there by yourself and fall through, it's very difficult to get back up on the ice once you fall through. So you can, you know, but always a good idea to take a length of rope. So if you see somebody fall through, or if you have a rope and you fall through, somebody else can throw you that rope. There's those ice spike things that a lot of people wear around their neck. There's basically a handle with a little 1-inch or so spike sticking out of the bottom. You can at least get a grip if you fall in to get back up on the ice, pull yourself back up on. Always a good idea to have those. And the Game and Fish Department recommends that you never drive on the ice with anything. You know, it just...
I always stay away from people if they drive a truck on there. Like, okay, I'm going to be fishing over here.
go the other way. I know a lot of folks do it and to access it. And you know, people used to drive cars and pickups on the ice all the time. Of course, now with these side-by-sides and four-wheelers, a little bit lighter piece of equipment, and they'll drive those out. And, you know, that's... you're taking a risk doing that.
Every year somebody's truck falls through.
Yeah,
right?
And so we just recommend don't do that. But so, you know, and the thing with Healy, you know, at DeSmet there's really no regulation saying that you, at DeSmet you can drive on the ice if you if you make that decision, of course, like I said, we recommend not to, but when it comes to Healy, you know, that's really a private body of water at this point. And the landowner has entered into agreement with the Game Fish Department to allow people to fish out there, to allow the public to fish. But they wanted some rules, and one of the rules was you can't drive on the ice.
And I don't think I've ever seen anyone drive on the ice out there. I do quite a bit of ice fishing. I don't think I've ever
seen
anyone.
Well, most people know that, and most people are pretty good about it because they realize if people start breaking the rules, the landowner could say, hey, that's it. You guys broke the rules. We're taking this out of the program, and it could become a private. So they police themselves pretty well. And I've been out there a time or two when somebody has started to unload the four-wheeler, and guys will say, hey, you know you can't, you're not allowed to drive that on the ice. And these people said, no, I didn't know that. And so some of the anglers out there have you know, they do a very good job of policing themselves.
Sure. And so let's take just one second here and talk kind of about what we're talking about, ice safety conditions. I know I've seen charts of this many inches, like 4 inches is okay to walk on, yada, yada, yada. And I think I saw to drive on, like with a vehicle, is like 18 inches or something they recommend.
Yeah, you can find a lot of that information on, if you just, you know, Google like safe ice or something and on the internet. And I think some states like Minnesota, where there's a, you know, ice fishing is
in July.
Is they, you know, very popular and stuff. They'll have a little chart, and you're right, Brady. I can't. It's like 4 inches a human can walk on, and then, you know, 6 or 8 snow machine and pick up. And finally, when you get a couple feet, you can drive, I guess, a big truck out there or
drive
whatever.
Drive an RV and camp.
Yeah, there. And some people do that, you know, on places. So just make sure that you got, you know, at least 4, 5, 6 inches if you're going to walk on it to be safe and stuff. So
one other thing I'd like to add for Healy, and under the special ice fishing provisions, there during the winter there's a couple reservoirs in our region where you can use more than two poles, and there's only two, and that's Lake DeSmit and Keyhole. On Healy you can only use two poles through the ice. So I want people to be aware of that.
Now, when you say two poles, that includes tip-ups?
That yep. includes okay. tip-ups.
Two lines.
Okay, two lines. Gotcha.
So, like I said, there are only two reservoirs in our whole region, Keyhole and DeSmit, that you can use more than two.
Okay. So.
Right. And that limit is six.
Six, right? Yep.
When you're fishing through the ice on Keyhole and Lake DeSmit, you can have up to six lines if okay. you so desire.
And those lines have to have your name on them. And you have to obviously be within a good distance. You can't go up and fall asleep in your camper, which has happened. But you've got to be there, and I think it's the 300-foot rule. You have to be within 300 feet with your name on those tip-ups or poles.
Okay. So ice hunting or ice fishing will be coming real soon for a lot of people. And is now the time to complete those hunter harvest surveys?
Yeah, we, you know, hunting seasons for 17 are winding down, and part of that, you know, as long as we're getting prepared for the season, actual hunting, then there's completion of the hunter harvest survey, and the Game Fish Department contracts with a professional outfit to do that survey for us, and I would guess a lot of people have received those. I have, and my wife have already received those, our deer surveys in the mail. For some species like moose and bighorn sheep, everybody that gets a license is surveyed. If you have a deer, elk, or antelope, depending on the area, not everybody will receive one. There'll be a subsample of those that will receive the hunter harvest survey. But you know, the ones that will be starting up here pretty quick are gray wolf and fall turkey. Those will start pretty quick, or maybe they've already gotten. Those seasons are winding down. Wolf ends the end of this month, December 31 and stuff. So those will be, and we encourage people, as I mentioned earlier, if you provide your email address with that application, you'll get an email. It takes probably less than 5 minutes. You can go through those pretty quickly. And we use a lot of that information is very valuable to us for setting the next year's season. So we just encourage people to, if you get one of those, get it filled out and get it returned to us. We really appreciate it. And if you do it over with an email address rather than mail it out and all that, you can save the department, which in turn saves hunter and fishermen money. It's $2 to $3 per response that can be saved if you complete that thing on email. So if you can do it electronically, saves money, quick, easy, and we get the good information. So.
Okay. And we talked a little bit about pheasant hunting when we were talking about youth licenses and requirements, but the pheasant hunting season is coming to an end here in, what, about 9 days?
Yep. In this area, you know, hunt area number one, it'll close on December 31. Of course, we have daily bag of three and a possession limit of nine. And
well, now, I have a question about the possession limit. Is that, now say, is that for one person, if he happens to be camping or something, he can still only have nine? Or is that if you have a group of seven, you can't have 21 pheasants, you can only have nine between your whole group?
No, no. For each licensed hunter, they can have their own possession limit.
Okay.
So if you live in a family of four and everybody buys a license, or if you have a 12-year-old that doesn't, they can have their own. So potentially if everybody's going out hunting and you have to harvest your own birds, you could potentially have, 36 pheasants in the freezer.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, that's just that possession limit, and a lot of people get confused with that, is that that's the number that an individual or a group, that's the maximum number that they can have at any one given time. So if you've got nine pheasants in your freezer, you want to go hunting tomorrow, better eat a couple.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so you can't have nine in your freezer and go out and bring three more home. Then you would be in violation
of
your
possession. So I can't just go out every day, get my three, take them home just so I can eat pheasant all winter long.
No, right. That's not kind of how that's designed,
gotcha.
Brady.
It's a fairness issue, too.
I mean,
I know there are people that hunt the stock birds every day and get birds every day. And, you know, we want to let other people and kids have the opportunity. So we don't want people really to hoard. And I think nine pheasants in your freezer at one time is plenty.
Pretty good amount, right?
Yeah. I mean, like Bud said, if you eat a few and you only have six now in your freezer and you want to go shoot three, that's fine.
Okay. So as we mentioned, pheasant hunting season is coming to an end pretty quickly. What about some other upland birds?
Well, those seasons for sharp-tailed grouse, that season closes on December 31. Chukar and gray partridge, or Hungarian partridge, the statewide season closes the end of January 31. So if you're a chukar and hun hunter, you got another month plus a week or so. So you can go till the end of January. So,
And the question comes up on these licenses, or these seasons that go into the new year, you do need a new license. So your license doesn't carry over your 2017.
So it doesn't last for the entire season. It just lasts for the calendar year.
That's correct. So brought up a good point about buying your license now. You might save a couple bucks. So if you hunt that game bird season, and if you want to hunt Hungarian partridge or chukars in January, go buy your license now, and you can save. I think Bud's looking up the fee increase, what it goes up to. I think it might
be $3.
Goes up $3.
$24 right now, and it'll be $27 after the first year. So if you want to save $3, go buy it. And the conservation stamp price stays the same, $12.50. That's the one thing that did not go up at all. So,
and when you buy the conservation stamp, say you buy it for when you get your fishing license, you don't have to buy it again when you get a hunting license, right?
No, each licensed hunter or angler needs one in a calendar year.
Okay.
That covers everything.
And a brucellosis sampling update. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, that hunters have been very good in helping the department with sample elk for brucellosis. And we've been doing this now for, this must be 5 years or so, 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. where we've been, a lot of elk hunters have received this little box in the mail, and or we hand them out. If somebody doesn't have one and wants to, has a cow elk permit, see Jim, see Cheyenne Stewart, or the new biologist here, and they can get one of those sampling kits. And with cow elk seasons running till the end of the year, till December 31, we would still like to get, some more, maximize the number of brucellosis samples we can get. Very simple to do. When you kill that elk, there's a little vial in there. Fill that up with blood, seal it, wrap it in that paper towel, put it in the plastic bag that's in there, fill out that card, and hang on to that. Don't freeze it, and don't get it really warm. Just keep it cool, and try to get it to a game fish person as quick as you can, because that has to be, we run that through a centrifuge and separate that and then prepare the sample. Then at that point it can be froze. But that fresh blood sample, don't freeze it. Don't throw it up on your dash and then turn on the defroster and get it to be 140 degrees.
Don't boil it.
don't boil it. So, you know, we have, as of, you know, just a week or so ago, we've received 650 samples, of which 443, about 68%, were usable. So that's a good. And so far this year, I've not heard it, and, you know, this can change on a daily basis, but when I called down and got those numbers I just mentioned, so far we'd have no tested elk positive. They've all been negative, which is, cross our fingers, that is, that's, you know, what we want. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, we couldn't do this without hunters. So we really want to thank them for participating. And as I mentioned, if somebody still wants to, you have a cow elk permit and want to participate in the program, see Jim or somebody and get one of those sample kits. It's easy to do, and we really, really appreciate, you know, hunters helping us out with that. So,
all right, and we'll finish up today talking about hunter education instructor certification classes.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, we mentioned about having passed a certified hunter safety program, and if you want to hunt with a firearm here in the state of Wyoming, and you were born after January 1st of 1966, if you hunt with a firearm, you there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, you have to have passed a hunter safety course. Most of these courses are taught by volunteers. And so it's important that we have a lot of volunteers so we can have several of these courses during the year. And so those instructors, those volunteer instructors, have to be certified just like a hunter would be. And so in Sheridan, January, or early January, we're going to have a instructor certification class. So anybody that thinks they might want to become a hunter safety instructor, we'd encourage them to. There's a couple gals in our Cheyenne office that we would encourage these people to call, and then they would have to attend one of these classes that runs from January 4th through the 8th up in Sheridan. But the two gals in Cheyenne to call, one is Tristana Bickford, and it's 307-777-4542. So 37s and 4542. Get a hold of Tristana, or you can call Meg Frost at 307-777-4538. So get a hold of one of those gals if you think you might want to, and if you want to visit about, you know, what all that involves. Jim's taught hunter safety for a lot of years and helped teach hunter safety. So, you know, I'd encourage people to give him a call, call our Sheridan office, or call one of these gals and ask about it, you know, stuff. So we encourage, wouldn't hurt to have another instructor or two here in Buffalo and three or four in Sheridan. We have some people that have done it for a lot of years, you know, they're getting up there and they want to kind of phase out and retire from that as well as their other job. And so we need some new instructors, and just encourage people to think about that.
Yeah, the more the merrier. I mean, to put on a class, it's anywhere from 12 to 18 hours, and class sizes can be from a dozen to 20-some students. And it takes a lot of work. And usually most of the courses have, you know, five or six instructors that help and teach different sections. So the more the merrier on number of instructors. It would be nice to have another 10 instructors in the Buffalo area, and just kind of spread that out amongst instructors.
And so requirements for an instructor just has to go through this certification class?
Well, yeah, and the one thing that they all have to do now in this day and age is they have to have a background check to make sure that they pass that. And so, yeah, they're you know, if you've spent some time hunting and gun handling and stuff, and these classes, you know, a lot of times, or almost all the time, a game fish person will come and help with, I know Jim comes and talks about the regulations and laws at a lot of these. Somebody, one of the biologists might come talk about wildlife identification. So you'll get some help, You know, and instructors will help each other. Matter of fact, we have a hunter safety class going on this week. Jim Dawson, the 4-H extension educator, putting on a hunter safety class, and it was 3 or 4 nights this week. He's I think tonight's the last night, and then if they have a session where they actually fire the guns and stuff, the live fire session, that will be tomorrow. So, you know, these things are going on, and there's probably some people thinking, well, how do I know if there's a hunter safety class even going on? You can go on the Game Fish website, and most of those are on. There's a table there. You find your town or a town near you, and you can figure, there's going to be one in, you know, Buffalo in January or KC in, February or whatever. Look on there, find those, and then you can sign up right there too. And a lot of times on those, they'll have a maximum class size. Like Jim said, a lot of times there might be 10, but you might have 30 people sign up, and you know, maybe the instructor's only comfortable with 20. So that's why we need to have a lot of instructors to get those classes to where we offer enough that we don't have to have a great big class right for hunting season. That's the thing we kind of want to stay away from.
And Brady, part of the thing you had asked, what qualifications, obviously the background check, but to become an instructor, you will have went through this course, the whole course. You have to sit in for a whole course. So you'll also be certified as passing. And you may have not have ever passed hunter safety, but you can go through the certification course and pass your hunter safety and then become an instructor. So that's really the only requirements. And the course is, it's 4 days long, so it's not just a one-night deal on both of these instructor courses.
All right, excellent. Talking with Bud Stewart and Jim Seaman. Guys, we're kind of running out of time here with the Wyoming Game and Fish. I thank you so much for taking the time here today.
Hey, Brady, just one last thing. On behalf of the Wyoming Game Fish Department, Jim and I would like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, just want to say that hope you enjoy your outdoors in 2018.
Yeah, and a Merry Christmas to you guys, and it looks like we're going to get a little bit more snow today and into the morning, so it looks like it's going to be a white Christmas.
It looks like we'll have snow on the ground for Christmas.
All right, thanks again, guys. This is Classic Country, 1450 AM and 103.5 FM, KBBS.